Today's show is sponsored by DivvyCloud. DivvyCloud protects cloud and container environments from policy violations, threats, IAM challenges, and misconfigurations. Types of misconfigurations that have cost enterprises a jaw-dropping $5 trillion over the last 2 years. DivvyCloud provides continuous security and compliance across all cloud service providers and containers, including AWS, GCP, Azure, Alibaba, and Kubernetes, providing a comprehensive view of what's in your cloud, along with the tools and automation you need to manage it today. DivvyCloud is proving that security and innovation are not mutually exclusive, one customer at a time. Join innovative enterprises like Spotify, Fannie Mae, and Discovery, who have found the freedom to innovate securely without loss of control. To learn more, visit divvycloud.com/cloudcast. That's divvycloud.com/cloudcast to sign up for a free trial. DivvyCloud. Find your freedom to innovate.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome back to The Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And depending on when you're listening to this, we may already be rolling into October of 2020. Hard to believe we're into Q4 of 2020, the year that never seems to end. It still feels like March. Hope everybody is doing well. Hope everybody is staying safe and taking care of friends and family and colleagues and so forth. Lots of acquisition news in the cloud news of the week this week, so let's jump right into it. First one is a big move by Microsoft in a sort of, I guess, cloud but not really cloud way. So Microsoft acquires ZeniMax Media, who are the owners of Bethesda Software, for $7.5 billion, a move to really try and boost their gaming and Xbox business. So not completely a cloud play, but obviously, you know, delivered via the cloud. Bethesda is a company who has, you know, well-known names like The Elder Scrolls, Doom, Fallout. So for those of you that are gamers, that's going to mean a lot to you. This is probably a cloud news of the week that Aaron should be doing. He's much more into gaming than I am. But, you know, it's a huge industry. Obviously, it continues to grow as mobile computing and mobile gaming becomes easier and easier. The consoles become, more powerful year after year. So interesting to see them spending $7.5 billion, the same amount of money they spent on GitHub just a couple of years ago. So, you know, while some of the different parent companies as the cloud providers kind of are competing with their customers, you know, you see, you know, Amazon getting into different things or Google getting into different things. You know, Microsoft still has a sort of all over the place thing, right? There's part of their acquisitions that are, seems to be right in their wheelhouse of enterprise IT, things like GitHub. Then you see them getting into like LinkedIn. Now you see them, you know, expanding out in gaming. They're a little more all over the place. I mean, obviously still very technology centric. So interesting to see where Microsoft is spending their money. And now to the long list of acquisitions that have been happening over the last, I don't know, a couple days, 7 to 10 days. First on the list, PagerDuty acquired Rundeck for approximately $100 million. Runbook Automation. So PagerDuty, company that everybody knows, former sponsor here of the show, really great at notifications, gets into the runbook automation space. So, you get a notification and maybe you want to look for an automated way to remedy that notification. So congratulations to the Rundeck team, $100 million acquisition. I know some folks that used to be known as DTO Solutions out of Atlanta. So congratulations to them. Arista acquired Awake Security for an area that I'd never really heard of, this acronym. It's NDR, so Network Detection and Response, which is what I kind of always thought what security was around, but I guess this is now a specific area. This allows them to compete a little more with Cisco, kind of a lot of braggadocious claims in the acquisition notice about how they've been taking customers from Cisco in the security space. So Arista continues to move into broader spaces than just high-speed networking, data center networking, getting more into security. So congratulations to them. And then finally, this week is the week of VMworld. We're not going to really do much coverage of it because it's just starting today. We won't have a chance to kind of analyze it. We'll try and cover a little bit of it next week in Cloud News of the Week. But they did make an early week announcement. VMware is acquiring SaltStack. So we've seen a run of acquisitions of the security companies. Obviously, you know, the big four always used to be Chef, Puppet, Ansible, and SaltStack. Ansible got acquired a number of years ago by Red Hat. Chef recently acquired by, I forget the name of the company, none of us had ever heard of. I think it was called Progress Software, if I recall correctly. And SaltStack now acquired by VMware. So sort of leaves Puppet as the last company to be independently owned. No dollar amount for this acquisition. So you have to assume it's probably probably somewhere in the sub 100 million, sub 50 million. I don't want to speculate, but interesting to see VMware getting into automation, a space that they've done network management for a long time with vRealize and so forth. But interesting to see this huge run on automation companies, especially with COVID happening and all that sort of stuff. So a lot of acquisitions this week. I'm going to kind of wrap up Cloud News of the Week with that, and kind of excited about this one. Every once in a while we get a chance to talk about something that's a little bit different, but I think you guys are going to enjoy this next talk. We get a chance to really talk about how people are learning through these new mediums in which streaming is the medium, and the engagement model around streaming for new technology learnings, new technology hands-on and multi-way communication. So look forward to that right after the break. Today's show is sponsored by Datadog. Start monitoring EC2, RDS, ECS, and all your other AWS services in minutes with Datadog. Whether you have 10 instances or 10,000, Datadog automatically tracks hosts as you scale. Visualize metrics, automatically alert on anomalies, and collaborate across teams to quickly troubleshoot issues before they escalate. Give it a try with a free 14-day trial by visiting datadog.com/cloudcast, and Datadog will send you a comfy, complimentary t-shirt. That's datadog.com/cloudcast. Today's show is sponsored by Cloud Academy. Listen up, y'all. This is a great offer. With everyone using the same cloud platforms, winning and losing comes down to having the best talent to build products better and faster. Cloud Academy is the training platform of choice for Fortune 500 companies and thousands of tech professionals around the world. Thousands of video courses, learning paths, practical hands-on labs in real-world cloud environments, Cloud Academy has tools designed to help teams assess, build, and validate critical cloud skills. Most importantly, Cloud Academy stays agile, challenging you with new content, labs, and tons of features that ensure your skills stay relevant and everyone can level up. They cover everything from cloud certifications to DevOps to security to programming languages. You can get started now at cloudacademy.com. For a limited time, Cloudcast listeners can lock in 50% off the monthly price for life. Just put in the coupon code CLOUDCAST at checkout. It's a great way to pursue certifications or just build cloud expertise. Again, that's cloudacademy.com, and use the coupon code CLOUDCAST to lock in 50% off the monthly price. And we're back. And folks, every couple years or once or twice a year, we will kind of get off the real hardcore kind of cloud learning subjects for the podcast, because we know, we're all sort of immersed in it every day. And while we love it, we love learning about new stuff, there's also some times when, we kind of want to just learn about some other things that may help us in unique ways in which we learn, in which we communicate with other people. And sometimes there's just topics that Aaron and I want to learn a little bit more about, and that's going to be what we're going to do this week. So excited to bring back kind of an old friend of the show, somebody who I work with in my day job as well, but excited to have Chris Short on with us today. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brian. I really appreciate you bringing me on.
Yeah. So, beyond having sort of the richest, most, easy to listen to voice in the industry, CNCF ambassador. You've been on the show before. It's been a couple of years. You were doing a lot of early DevOps stuff. And you and I work together. You're, we both work on at Red Hat on Kubernetes stuff and other things. But you've taken on this sort of new world of sort of streaming content, sort of learning, teaching people about DevOps, containers, Kubernetes, and everything under OpenShift TV. So for those that may not know who you are in the broader CNCF community, cloud native community,
sure,
give folks a little bit of background and kind of the stuff that you're working on these days.
So I've been a longtime Kubernetes contributor, right? And one of the things that was needed a couple of years ago, I feel like now, was somebody else to help stream community meetings, right? And when I say stream community meetings, all the Kubernetes community meetings are recorded and live streamed. So they needed somebody with just a rig that could do this, right? Like use a tool called OBS, which is Open Source Broadcast Studio. It's Open Broadcast Studio is the name of it. It's open source software. Just make this meeting in Zoom show up in this box on YouTube kind of thing, right? And then we started saying, well, there's different stuff we can do with it, right? Like we can do bumpers, we can do intros and things like that. And, it didn't get too complicated in the Kubernetes community, and I helped every once in a while. I'm like the number third or fourth string person or whatever. And, I would stream a meeting every now and then. But then one day, my boss and a coworker are talking, and one of them had to kick their kids off of Twitch and the video game networks because there was no bandwidth for the meeting. And all of a sudden this idea came along. Wait, why don't we do live streaming? We're having problems reaching our, you know, like target audience, or, you know, our jobs as technical marketing managers is to go out and help people solve problems, to demonstrate new solutions, you know, to feature products in our demos kind of thing. And yeah, we could build demos all day from afar, but it's next to impossible to go hands-on with people unless you create a method and way to do that. And we found that, like, people were getting, and this was back in, you know, April, I should say, people were already getting virtual event fatigue, right? Like, that was already happening. So we decided, right, like, let's just put it out there. It'll be live. Folks can interact with us. And, you know, Chris, congratulations. You have the most experience streaming. This is your baby now. It wasn't quite like that, but it was close. You know, we've put out more than 200 hours of content so far, and we have had just this tremendous embracement of this content in a way that we did not think we would get, right? Like, we knew we needed a way to reach people, but we did not know that it would be, we would get a following like we have so quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll caveat a little bit if folks are listening, like, you know, sometimes you get into this kind of inception thing of like, oh, it's, you know, it's podcasters talking about mediums, or, you know, streamers talking about, like, my goal today is not so much to go like, you know, let's have people that do this all the time just talk about the doing it part. I felt like you said, you know, the world has sort of obviously shifted. We no longer have you know, physical trade shows. We no longer have meetups where a lot of people were kind of just learning from each other and asking questions.
Right.
And, you know, we have, you know, newer generations of folks coming into the industry who, you know, stuff like Twitch or other ways of learning. I mean, you know, I look at my kids and it's like they learn everything through YouTube, right? They learn.
Yep.
And so the challenge becomes like, how do you marry together this idea that, like, we're all trying to constantly learn stuff. You know, maybe the documentation's not perfect. Maybe there's follow-up questions you have, and like, how do we do that in some way that's this mix of like, I want to watch somebody else do it because they're experts, but I also maybe want to ask some questions, but maybe I'm not comfortable going up to them live. And, and I feel like you're starting to find that Venn diagram between all those things that we used to do sort of in real life, but maybe we weren't good at it. And, you know, in this case, you have pulled this all together under the OpenShift brand. It's OpenShift.tv. But kind of walk through some of the things that you're learning about, because you're creating content, you're helping to create content with some very, very technical people where you're doing hands-on demos, but other times you're talking to practitioners and you're like, hey, what did you learn? Like, what are some of the learnings you've found over the last, I don't know, 6 months or so? Just maybe things,
so
just what's going on?
There's like this intense thirst for human connection and learning at the same time, right? Like, people can single track their learning process through a number of sites right now, right? Like, it's very easy to get started on Udemy or Khan Academy or any of these other sites to just go start learning. But when you have the experts on the line, right, and that's typically, you know, who's on the shows on OpenShift TV or who I live stream with is an expert on a certain topic, and having that person there demonstrating what they're doing and, oh, actually making a mistake and, oh, having to figure out how to fix it, not only does it, you know, show a humanness to the person that is, quote, the expert, but it shows that person who's learning how that expert is troubleshooting, how that expert's going through the thinking process of why this broke, what should I check, where do I go next. That has been a huge and tremendous learning experience. And we've gotten to the point now where we just say we embrace failure on the channel because we learned so much from it as an audience. So that I think has been a huge learning. Another thing is that, like, a lot of people think it's really weird we're doing this at all, right? Like, not weird in the sense of bad, but weird in the sense of, oh my gosh, you're doing this and it's for free? We don't have to pay or register or sign up. Well, technically you have to register for a streaming service, but no, you don't. Like, this is stuff that we would put out into the universe anyway. We're just deciding to putting it out in the universe live and archiving it on YouTube for later use.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's really just kind of taking the world we're in and turning lemons to lemonade, right? That's what we're trying to do.
Right, right. Yeah. And I thought what was interesting is I thought, you know, for the people that listen to this show, you know, some of them come and tune in because they want to learn some things. And so it's kind of one directional. Others, I can imagine, go, hey, you know, maybe we're rolling out a new project at work. and I want to be able to tell people about this, or I want to be able to convince people that it was a good investment. And so I was like, okay, let's dig into this a little bit more. I'm curious, you know, like you mentioned, you guys have created over 200 hours of content. How much of that is, you know, really kind of technical content, right? Demos, you know, nerds talking about bits and bytes, versus how much of it is stuff that maybe it's a little higher, you know, kind of, I don't know, executive level. And why did you have a mix that you have?
Yeah, so our team is technical marketing managers, right? So we're going to have a technical audience, feel like. So we've designed, you know, technical first, but that's not the only thing we want on the channel, right? Like, we want to appeal to more than just the people manning the keyboards every day, or and the women hammering the keys, and those that are out there just making infrastructure go. We want to appeal to a broader audience than that, because they're busy, right? Like, most of the time, they're going to catch us after the show. So if they have a question, they're going to hit us up later, and we make it, you know, ourselves accessible to that. But, you know, we have shows from across the spectrum, including one in particular called In the Clouds with Red Hat Leadership, where we sit down every other Thursday to talk to either a distinguished engineer or a VP here at Red Hat to talk about what they, you know, the where we are now, where they think we're going, and how we're going to get there kind of thing. So we definitely have a large swath of technical content, but we also have content that meets the needs of people working in the public sector. Right. People working in, you know, we're starting this week, or I'm sorry, next week, a show just for Red Hat Enterprise Linux folks, right? Like, so we're broadening our wings, and, you know, we're adding in an OpenShift admin office hours because our developer office hours are so popular, right? So it's become this thing of its own that we're very proud of, but it's because we're bringing the right people to the airwaves, essentially, right? And people are latching on and watching.
Right. Now, I know one thing sort of surprised me a little bit. You know, anytime you start something new, people immediately are like, okay, you know, how popular it is, that they want some metric around it. And instead of just purely going for like, hey, you know, how many views did we have? You're kind of measuring yourself based on A, how many people show up, and that's always sort of an easy thing, but then you've been measuring kind of engagements, right? Like, how much are people asking questions? Like, how easy do you talk a little bit about how you think about the metrics that go with it, because I think that's always an important thing for people to feel like, am I doing something that's successful or helpful or whatever?
So for me, I mean, I've been on the show before. I have a deep DevOps background, right? So metrics are everything for me, right? Like, if I can measure something, awesome. If I can measure myself against something else, even better. And the coolest thing I think about Twitch in general is that all the stats APIs are wide open. So there's all these sites out there for Twitch specifically where you can just go get the data for any channel. And the data is enormous. Sites like SullyGnome.com and Twitch Tracker. There's so much statistical data you can gather. But we particularly are interested in three metrics. Hours of content produced, yes, that shows a total body of work, right? Yep. from the whole channel. But like, you could produce 200 hours of fluff. That's entirely possible, right? So what we also measure is chats per stream. How many chat messages do we get per stream? And on average, that engagement is usually pretty high. And that, I think, is what's most important, because, you know, I can bring people, you know, I can have 3,000 people register and 1,000 people show up, and, you know, we get those people to show up. But are they networking? Are they interacting with each other? Are they missing that physical component, right? That's what we kind of looked at. Like, what replaces that physical component of being at a meetup or at an event kind of thing? And we said, well, chat. Chat definitely does. So we measured the chat messages and per stream, and that's all open metrics that you can go grab, you know, straight off the Twitch API yourself if you'd like. And then we have what I call the golden number, which is hours watched per hour of content produced. And this one is hard for me to explain because it's a ratio and I'm bad at math. But for every hour of content we produce, it gets watched 32 times. That is an enormous amount of people watching an hour of content, right? So, and a lot of that comes from Twitch, which is our smallest network, right? But it just happened to be where we started the first 20 episodes. And then we added on a service called Restream.io, which is a godsend for anybody in the streaming business. If you have to do this professionally, I highly recommend it. But what it does is it allows you to stream to multiple services at once with a single host, a single stream, and you can just aggregate that chat as well, because it has a bot that works in the back end that just says, oh, somebody's talking on Facebook. Well, here it is in chat on Twitch and YouTube and Periscope and everywhere else. And that way, you just come to wherever you're comfortable, be it Twitch or Periscope or YouTube. You can chat with everybody else wherever they are, and you're building a community at that point. And we have seen regulars start popping up, and we've actually sent some gifts off to people and gotten some people in the KubeCon EU because of their engagement on the channel and because the channel wouldn't be the same without them. So we really appreciate our regular viewers for sure.
Yeah, very, very cool. Let's dive a little bit into the tech. obviously, we won't go into, you know, all the bits of it, but, you know, for people that might be saying, hey, this is interesting, I might want to set this stuff up, like, What are a couple of the technology basics that you need beyond just what everybody's been doing lately, which is like, oh, I'm trying to have a better microphone and maybe a little better camera view so because people see me on video. But like,
right.
what are some of those technical things that you found that help keep people engaged or just, you know, you get better feedback from people about the experience?
So I look at radio often, right? And then you look at podcasting too, and kind of the same way, like dead air is bad, right? Like you have to have something on air, right? Like people have to be talking or some kind of something to keep people's attention going constantly, right? Like, so my job as a host or a producer is to keep that conversation moving at all times, right? So that's usually the way it was explained to me is, you know, the order of the way things matter is the content matters first, mm-hmm. the audio matters second, the video matters third, and it's a distant third. No one really cares if the video is a little grainy unless you're trying to display something, right? Like no one, just as long as that content is good and clear, you'll be good. So we actually have a cloud platform streaming repo where we keep all of our streaming docs, our OBS assets, you know, you name it, it's there. And we found that, you know, having those docs out there and accessible to everybody is helpful. You know, we have a particular one for, you know, personas. We call it, we have, you know, three different personas, guest producers and streamers. That tech, we try to keep dead simple.
Yeah.
That you know, right? Like, so I use, and I recommend to other folks because who knows what you have tech-wise, I use an 8th gen i3 Intel Nook to stream from Fedora to Restream to all the different services. And then I just have my Mac, work-issued Mac, sitting over here on the other desk where I have my, you know, nice camera and mic hooked up and everything. But in theory, on a powerful enough box, you can do it all from one machine. But OBS runs on one box behind me. That's that i3, you know, 8th gen i3 Intel Nook. That's all you need to stream. You don't need anything super fancy unless you're trying to do like game streaming or anything like that, right? Like you do not need to go overboard to do this. Remember, there are 15-year-olds that are doing this with their iPhones. So like that was the whole intent, right? Like we're not going to spend a ton of money on this. You know, we have all the skills and capabilities and tooling essentially you need. And we even have in that repo a equipment guide that I need to update real quick. But a mic arm broke that was in the suggested guide, so I have to replace that. But the equipment guide has like a high, medium, low kind of like price scale. And all of it's designed to fit within like under $250 threshold. Right. And then I mentioned that, like, I have this other bespoke setup over here, which is insane if you're doing, like, live streaming on a constant basis. But, you know, most people can get by with, I don't recommend, you know, the Blue Yeti mics because they pick up everything, but, like, a decent Rode mic and a decent set of wired headphones and you're off and running, right? Like, that's all you need, right? Like, the webcam in your laptop, probably good enough. If you want a 1080p webcam, good luck finding one.
Right.
I hear, you know, like they might be back in stock places, but yeah, like we try to keep the tech simple as possible. We have everyone dial into Zoom. And then from there, we use OBS to capture that screen, add our overlays and effects and everything else we want, and then broadcast that out.
Right.
And that just keeps it simple from, you know, getting people on air is hard enough, doing all the coordination and everything. When you start asking them, okay, now turn on Skype for audio. Okay, now for video, turn on this and da, 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 da. You know, no offense to I just did a podcast where they were using Jitsi Meet for the first time to like just manage feeds and stream and everything else. And I was like, this is not the best experience for me right now because people kept freezing and we had to keep restarting and so forth, so on. There's great open source tools out there. Jitsi is a great tool, but you got to like know what you're doing with it.
Right.
And so we kind of want to eliminate that toil, that bar to entry, that barrier to entry. We want to keep that very low for our guests. So, you know, we basically say, if you're a guest, all you have to do is, you know, please use wired headphones if you got them. And then just show up to the Zoom call. Like, right. You have everything you need to do a meeting. You have everything you need to do a live stream. Right. Like that's essentially what we're at.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think what you really hit on, and, you know, if anybody's sort of listening to this and they're going, hey, this might be a cool way for me to, you know, work with colleagues or start up a new community or something. I think you hit on the really important things. It's sort of the same stuff we've learned from doing the podcast forever. And they follow kind of the same pattern, which is number one, you know, make content that other people would think is interesting, or, you know, first thing, you make it so that you think it's interesting because you probably have an understanding of your audience, but make content that's interesting. Do it frequently enough that people know when it is, right? They can kind of build their schedule around it. Audio is really important. Like if your audio is poor, people will just stop listening because it's like, it hurts my head, whatever. And yeah, video is a distant third, fourth, fifth or something, right? Like people, you know, a lot of learning.
I mean, unless you're showing like a UI or something, right?
Yeah.
Like they don't care.
Yeah. And you know, if you're getting into it, and that's, you know, that's part of where the feedback comes back. It becomes sort of two-way. If you're like, hey, man, I couldn't see what you were doing there or what you typed. Could you? But, you know, you think about that and you're like, it's no different.
It's interesting you mentioned feedback, though.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
We just finished this morning another episode of our Developer Experience Office Hours where we bring on someone from our UX team who very much lives in the future. We actually call her Serena from the future because we have to always put disclaimer like what you see on screen right now might not actually end up in the product the way you see it or at all for that matter. So, you know, we get feedback on our product live on air from people that are just tuning in. And people love that show because they know that if they make a suggestion in that show that's really good, it's going to end up in the product.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. Like, so that's why they tune into that Office Hours for developers. Well, we want the same experience for, you know, the admin side. So we're starting a show for the admin folks and the, you know, for the admin view itself and getting that feedback into the program and everything. We've done polling. We've done, you know, all kinds of like gamification of things and creating point systems and things like that. Like, it's a lot harder than you think to get to that next level of, streaming superstarness. But for us, it's just, you know, we're iteratively working away at this, trying to make it the best thing we can. And it's not like we have budget or people set aside for it, right? Like, I'm a TMM. My boss said, this is your job now, Like, that's basically what happened. I got reassigned to do this. And it is a full-time job. I will absolutely not ever say that it, like, somebody or a team of people could do this on their own. I do feel like the amount of coordination it takes should and probably will always exist with one, maybe two people, but like, I don't like open sourcing, committing like a live streaming network is hard. You got to have somebody willing to say, no, that content's going to be better than this content based off these metrics that we've had in the past. And like, you have to have that familiarity, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, without giving away maybe all of your secrets, have you found that, you know, certain formats tend to, I don't know, be more popular. Like, I know you do a lot of Ask Me Anything where you'll have, say, you know, a bunch of product managers come and people ask questions. I know you do some live demonstrations. You do, like, are you finding certain formats or, you know, attract different kinds of people or work better? Or like, what drives success maybe than other things? If you can
figure that out. A good camaraderie between all the people on the call drives success, right? Like, and I always, even if I know all the people already know each other, I always built in a little buffer time about 15 minutes before you'll get that invite from me before your scheduled go live time. And it's like, what is that for? And I tell people, you know, hey, I have to make sure your AV and everything's set up. But what I'm also doing is like Hey, how you doing today?
Yep.
Hey, long time. You know, I'm building the and establishing like the rapport and trying to get the mood of the room kind of thing. And so that way everybody feels a little bit more comfortable, right? Like my job as a producer or a host is to make sure I get the best possible person that's on air at that moment. So, you know, making people feel comfortable is what I do in that early 15-minute window. Then that way, when it is just, you know, one or two people, it's super easy. When it's five people, that gets a little different because you might have somebody that's never been on the show before, right, or never been on the channel ever, right? Like, where do they fit into the puzzle? There's these regulars here. And like getting that person to be comfortable is my goal, right? Yep. So you have to build the psychological safety even on the live stream. Even if it only takes a few minutes, you still have to do it.
Right. Yeah, DevSec streaming ops or something like that. Yeah. hug streaming ops. Let me ask you one last question before I let you go, because I know you're busy. you know, we talked at the beginning, you spent some time as a CNCF ambassador. You are around communities a ton. Have you had any conversations yet with some of the events people, as you know, you're learning more about this, it's kind of becoming successful? Like, do you think we'll start to see some of this into the bigger shows? Are there going to be opportunities to weave it in?
Yeah. So actually, next week we are doing, you know, normally we do a what's new in version, you know, X.Y release call. Next week, we're actually doing that live for everyone for the first time on the channel. So you will learn what's new in 4.6 at the same time as the rest of Red Hat does in OpenShift 4.6. So that I think is kind of like it's a big win for me, because the fact the PMs, the product management team, sees value in doing it that way is tremendous. We'll see if it works out in the long term, but right, you know, it's an experiment. All this is an experiment at this point. I've kind of you know, going down that rabbit hole is a long, long way to go.
And having lived through those things internally, I mean, those are typically, you know, a couple hour presentations. There's, you know, anywhere from 500 to 1,000 people attending. And that's for an internal thing. Yeah. You open up that to, you know, a much broader number of people. It's going to be very interesting to sort of watch the moderation of questions and, you know, how comfortable people are with sharing stuff. I know, you know, Red Hat's always pretty transparent about stuff, but yeah, it'll be a good experiment. This is very, very cool. Well, listen, man, any last plugs you want to sort of, you know, where can people find all this? So we talked about OpenShift TV, but like if people want to
like OpenShift.tv is the site. If you know, interact with us on Twitter, it's just twitter.com/OpenShift. You can hit me up, C Short at Red Hat, or on Twitter as well, Chris Short. You know, suggest ideas all you want. We have a stream form, just red.ht/stream form. If you have an idea for a show, like if you're a customer or a partner or whatever, you want to come off and demo something you've done potentially, I'm all ears. You know, if it sounds good, we'll bring you on. You know, we love having our customers and partners on.
Yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah, we love having everybody on, but yeah, especially our customers, right? Yeah. So, yeah, please feel free to, you know, volunteer to come on the channel. We'll, you know, have you on, and you'll have some awesome video afterwards. It'll be a, you know, nice little experience for you. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Chris is, I can vouch for it. And not just cause he's a colleague and teammate. The guys do a great job with this. I highly recommend it. If you're interested just in the space, it doesn't have to be OpenShift specific. It's, you know, it's Kubernetes, it's cloud native, it's, you know, DevSecOps. It's all the things that I think people turn into the cloud, you know, tune into the Cloudcast for anyway. So very cool. Chris, with that, again, as always, thank you for the time today. Thanks for teaching us some new stuff, folks. As always, thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for, you know, rating the show and giving us feedback. And if you haven't told a friend or haven't rated the show, we'd love to hear your feedback. You know, show@thecloudcast.net always lets you, you know, give us feedback on what you want to hear next, or guests, or, you know, suggestions for who should be on. So with that, we'll wrap it up and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.